Hello, and thank you for joining us for a few inspirational moments and loving conversation with C. Melita Webb. Today, I was going to discuss ways to recognize love. And I have all these thoughts, you know, prepared in my mind and keywords that I want to cover. And it's a little difficult to ignore the reality of what we're seeing, you know. And so I'm just going to channel the feelings of a mother looking at life for the people, the children that she loves, those that she has given birth to, those that she has not given birth to, those that are related to her by marriage, and the ones that God is blessed to have come into her life along the way. As a mother, I have been holding in my feelings. I have been, you know, thinking that because I raised my children a certain way and in a certain area, that they were maybe safer than the majority of people who look like me. And I realized that I have not had the quote-unquote true perceived monolithic African-American experience. And so, you know, in fact, you know, as I was raising my children, I didn't see myself as being, initially, as being African-American mother. I saw myself as just being a mother. And then society started reminding me of what they were perceiving based on the outside. They were looking at skin and not thinking about, you know, what's within. And so as a mother looking at the headlines and seeing the images and hearing people's pain, hearing their confusion, and hearing their trauma, you know, I want to talk about that, because I think that that's where we need to go to heal. And so me pretending that I am not having this experience doesn't serve anyone. And the ironic thing is, if I was talking to someone who was really living in the chaos right now, I would have a different hat on. And I would be finding a way to empathize with them and to actually hear their heart. And so, you know, I just want to share my thoughts with you as if that's the conversation we're having. Because, you know, I think that the reality is that when you have a brown or black or red or quote unquote yellow body, as they define it by the rainbow, you're perceived different, and there's no way around it. And, you know, just because I didn't perceive myself as a color doesn't mean that other people weren't seeing that color when every time they walked into my presence or I walked into their presence. And I think that we, through our birth experience, as far as in our living experience and the cultures that we fit into, we learn, we actually absorb biases and prejudices that we don't recognize. And so I don't know that I would say that everyone who thinks that people who do not look like them are bad people. I just think that they haven't been exposed to the right information. And I think that they've heard so many bad things, and they've seen the way that people are portrayed in the news and in the media and in some of these crazy shows, that that's their perception of who they will be interacting with. So they don't take the time to shake your hand, say hi, give you a smile, and see what's inside, because they've already got a block up and they are fearful in some ways, right? And the thing about our society is that we tell each other to not show fear. We tell our men, don't show fear. But the reality is, a lot of us are in fear, right? And we're in fear for our own lives, our children's lives, and in some cases, our parents' lives. Because we've seen the violence perpetrated on people, you know, as young as 5 and 6 year old kids being put in handcuffs, put in back of patrol cars, and, you know, traumatized, all the way up to 75, 85 year olds who were shot holding things like remote controls, or maybe having, I think there was one who had, was having some blood sugar issues, and he was a minister and he was like on his way home. And the interesting thing is that we don't have all the details in it, in the cases. We have the details that the family releases, the details of the witnesses, and, you know, in most cases, you know, recently we've been seeing the, as they say, the proof in the pudding with the videos. But I think that not only can anything be manipulated or changed, augmented to fit someone's narrative, but we can actually ourselves not tangibly touch those things or change them, but we can just hear certain words, we can feel certain triggers, and we can let it go past us. And so yesterday I listened to part of the trial, and I listened to this man describe his brother, and it made my heart warm, because he made this person human. He made this person human first, a man second, a loving person, and then last, a statue of like a giant of a man. But the unfortunate reality is that each time we look at somebody who we think is very large, muscular, and in brown skin, brown, black, red, yellow skin, we see them as a potential threat. And sometimes, you know, part of it is because of how people are dressed. And I'm not going to say it isn't, because I have been guilty myself of going, ooh, I may not be as safe as I could be around someone based upon what they, how they're dressed. Or, you know, what kind of car, how they've got their car, as they used to say, blinged out. I don't know what the current words are now. And so it dawned on me that part of the problem is that we're not seeing each other as human. We're not looking past the skin. And so people say, I don't see color, I don't see race. Well, that's not factual. If you have eyes that are able to perceive the tint of the human skin and the colors of the rainbow, you see color. And while what I think people are trying to express is that they try not to let what they see on the outside dictate how they treat people on the inside. And that I can respect and I can appreciate. But to falsely throw your hands up and say, I don't see color, in some ways is offensive, because you're not even willing to have the conversation of how we can be, you know, united and embrace our differences and celebrate our differences, as well as, you know, embrace the similarities and celebrate our similarities. And so if we want our children to have a better future, we have to learn to say what we mean, to take the time and break it down, define our words and make them clear. We have to show that we are speaking the truth of what we are saying. So if you want to be a proponent and a help and assist people who don't look like you. You know, ask a friend. You know, find out how you can be involved. You know, and I'm not talking about the things where people are out and they're, you know, burning stuff or doing whatever they're doing. I don't have any issue with that. But I will mention that just briefly in a minute because it does kind of play into this. But I think that the dialogues have to happen between us because we're friends. And in most cases, we're parts family. We are literally have people in our family who don't look like us. And God's children come in a variety. And you talk about rainbow, Skittles has nothing on the vibrance and the hues and the beautiful creations that God has placed on this earth. And so when you take the perception that someone hasn't worked for what they have, or someone has never, you know, that they don't come from a good background, or they don't have the knowledge to cast a vote, which is what I heard someone say yesterday. He said that if somebody wasn't intelligent enough to get an ID, why do we want them to vote? You know, you have to look at our education system. You have to look at the fact that a lot of people weren't allowed to read. Even, you know, they weren't, I don't want to say allowed to, but they were not encouraged to read. They were not given the skills. And I'm speaking from experience because I've seen these people in my family, and they have went through schools, and they have actually been, you know, graduated through the next grade and the next grade and the next grade. But, you know, maybe they don't know how to write a checkbook, or maybe they don't know how to send a letter. They don't know where how to address it. And those kind of things, you know, they start at home, and then they are supposed to be enhanced in our school systems. And so, you know, as we go back to the issue of cultures and how things are going, you know, a lot of times you might hear something in the news and you say, I wonder, is that, you know, who committed that crime? And so, you know, I saw something hit my iPad screen, and it said something about a store or something that was destroyed. And so I was like, well, I wonder what that's about. So I go and look, and then I realize it's from the latest life that was taken needlessly. Let's just be clear, needlessly. And I think that what people are forgetting is that these children, these men, these women, these mothers are scared to be stopped by the police. Whether they have done anything wrong, whether they have anything in their car, whether they have, you know, whether they're lawyers, the DA, the military, the preachers, whether they are a grandmother, we have seen some crazy mess go on. We have seen officers shoot into a van full of children. People are trying not to admit to the reality of living in America. Right? And I can't speak to living anywhere else because I've never been abroad. But I can tell you what it's like to be a brown, black, Latino, Hispanic, Native American, East Indian. You see what I'm saying? Are you getting the colors that I'm putting here for you? The beautiful brown colors of skin. And so, you know, it's an interesting charge to want to live your life loving everyone, and at the same time realizing that a lot of people are being taught not to love you. A lot of people are being brainwashed to think that there is nothing good within you. And these people are getting into positions of power. They are becoming, you know, policemen, doctors, lawyers, politicians, and they have nothing good for you, but they expound to be faith-based people. And that's something they got to deal with God, because I can't control anybody but me, and I'm not going to have a codependent relationship trying to figure out that mentality, because it's not for me to do. That's for God to handle. But what I can say to you is that when you take the time and you look at these cases, look past the skin. And I don't care what skin color you are. Just look past it. Look past the skin, look at the issues, and compare apples to apples, oranges to oranges, and look at the numbers. And don't get into the semantics. Don't get lost in somebody who just wants to debate and argue, and they will never see the truth. Don't waste your time. Don't waste your energy. And don't give them that power for that moment in your life. If you're trying to talk to someone and they won't listen to reason and you have the facts and these are indisputable facts, let it go. You know, don't sit there and continue a discussion that is fruitless. If it has no value, nothing will change them. That's for God to do. But as a mother, I thought of what George Floyd's mother, what she saw when she saw her baby. I thought about, you know, Michael Brown and what his mother saw when she saw her baby. And I realized that Breonna Taylor never got a chance to have a baby. I understand the Sandra Bland never had a chance to be heard. I understand that Tamar Rice doesn't have another tomorrow. And I understand that some people will not listen to these names. And I understand that people want to say that they did it to themselves, or they should have just been still, or they should have just complied. But I'm telling you that when you are in a state of fear for your life, you don't know how to be still. If you are claustrophobic, you don't want to be put into a box, especially a small box. And when we are being victimized, instead of humanized, people don't see that we're just trying to survive. People don't understand what it means when you say, "I can't breathe." And the interesting thing is, as an asthmatic, sometimes I don't breathe well. And I have told a doctor and I have said, you know, "I can't breathe." And people assume because you can get the words out that you can breathe. That ain't always true. And I can tell you, as someone who has issues with small spaces, that I will do fine if I can move my arms, if I can breathe and I can, you know, have some space. But if you put me into a environment where I can't move my arms and my heart starts to beat, I might get sweaty, I might get shaky, jittery, and I might feel like I need to jump out of my own skin and run. And it is an overpowering feeling because you feel like something is wrong with you, but you don't know what's wrong. And it's scary. It's scary. And I think I shared that with you of how I developed that fear, but I'm not sure. So I'm going to speak it. And if we find that I've already shared it with you, we will cut it out. But I was going in to have a MRI, when they were trying to define what was going on with my eyes. And this clinic, which I'm not going to name because I believe they were trying to do the best they could with what they had. They wanted to put some dye into my arms so that they could get the best picture of what was going on with the swelling and pain in my eyes. And what happened was, the first tech, the radiological tech, was very nice, very sweet. And she tried to insert the needle twice. And then she thought about it and she was going to do it a third time. And she said, "No, let me get you to infusion department. They do this all day long. You just have really small veins. So she took me to the infusion department. And they had two nurses in there. And one nurse, she tried. And she tried twice. And I'm like, you guys, this ain't gonna work for me because A, I don't like needles. And B, it's causing me a little problem. So she said, the other nurse said, I don't even want to try. You guys have already stuck her four or five times between the two of you. I'm just going to say that her veins are just too small. I don't want to put her through it. So they take me back over to the technician for the MRI. And I said, well, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't know whether to go back home or can you guys just do it without the dye? And she said, well, you know, I was able to see better in there. Let me just try it one more time. If I don't get it, you'll go home and, you know, we'll just do it without the contrast. We'll tell the doctor, or I'll call him, whatever I need to do. So I agree. I sit down. I breathe. I pray to God while she's sticking me, and I'm breathing and I'm praying because I don't like needles. She gets it in. So, you know, I'm thinking at this point I will feel relief because I've done MRIs, CTs before. I've prayed through needles before. I've prayed through anesthesia and for surgery, right? Well, I get in and I say, I'm a little cold. Excuse me. I say, I'm a little cold. And she said, okay, I'll give you a blanket. Now I have my eyes closed and I didn't realize how tightly she wrapped me in this blanket. And she says, don't move. I just need you to be still to do this thing. It's like a 10-minute procedure. If you can be still, we can get it done really quick. And so something kicked in me when she wheeled me into this little machine, and I realized that she had literally wrapped my arms to the point where I could not move a breath. And when that reality hit me, the negative energy surged and the fear was present. It was real. I was stuttering. I was like, ma'am, I need to get out of here. I need you to get me out of here. I can't stay under this. I just need to get out right now. I said, I'm sorry. I can't do this. I need you to let me get out. Give me a few minutes. I can't do it. And she said, well, you know, we spent so much time trying. I was like, look, you just need to get me out of here because it's going to be really a problem for us if you don't get me out of here. So she pulls me out. You know, I do what I need to do. I get myself together. Get my prayer going and take some for the anxiety. I get back in and I'm able to get through the procedure. But I have had issues with closed spaces ever since. And so I can tell you, as someone who deals with that, that it's not a good feeling. And you can have those issues getting in a car, whether it's a police car, a friend's car, your child's car, or your own car. And so don't think you know what someone is going through if they're not doing what you think they should be doing. And if you're in a place of authority, put yourself in someone else's shoes and ask yourself, why is this person resisting? Why is this woman shaking? Why is she crying when I walk up to her window? Right? And I do remember hearing an exchange like that where the cop asked her and she said, because I'm just scared. And he said, ma'am, I'm not going to hurt you. I just want to ask you a few questions. She said, I know, but I'm just scared. I'm just scared because you guys keep killing us. You keep killing us. And as she was saying those words, as a mother, I felt those tears, right? And I've seen where they have shot people who are quote unquote Caucasian as well. I saw, you know, I don't remember everything behind it, but I remember one being shot on campus because he wasn't doing what they told him to do, and he's no longer here. And I remember a woman being pulled over, and she's saying, I'm scared. And the man, he thought it was funny. The officer made a joke and said, we don't shoot white people, don't you know? We only kill black people, you know, and brown people, whatever, you know, something like that. Look it up, Google it, it's there. So don't sit back here and say because somebody is blessed to have height, to have a good muscular bill, and to be kissed by the sun, which is what I think our melanin is, that we don't deserve to be considered human. That we don't deserve to be considered a man a woman or somebody's child. Because just because you have a fear that is irrational, that does not mean that I have a less value. It does not mean I have less value or that I do not have a purpose on this earth. And if you're okay with anyone being shot, killed, hurt, abused, no matter what color of their skin, then I don't even know how to reach you, but I will pray for you. Because everyone that God puts on this earth deserves to live. I don't appreciate when I hear this stuff about this one and that one and this one and that one, because you know what? We're all created by the same creator, whether you believe or you don't believe. And if you take somebody's life and you're able to sleep at night, I think you need help. Because I believe that the average person who has to do that to protect themselves or their family is going to be traumatized. So if you tell me that, you know, you hit a taser and you didn't mean to grab the gun, I'm going to ask you to check yourself. I'm going to ask you to think about that. Because when I heard you say, oh, I just shot him, I didn't hear you say, oh, my God, I just shot somebody's child and I wasn't trying to do it. Do you hear the difference in that? You know, and I know that you're not going to see life like I see life. Maybe you never gave birth to a child. Maybe you've never watched a funeral of somebody that you love that's been taken out of this life too soon. Maybe you've never been fearful when your child has left the house. Maybe you don't have to call your kids each time you hear that there's a shooting somewhere in your neighborhood or in a neighborhood close by or in a city or a state or a town that you know somebody's in there that you love. And maybe you've become accustomed, like me, to just texting and saying, hey, baby, how you doing? Because if I can hear my child breathe, I know he is still alive. Because that is the reality that I live with each day. And, you know, I can't even say that I am sorry for the things that have happened in my life that woke me up and told me what the world was perceiving when they looked at me, because that's how I have kept my children safe. But it's becoming interesting when we have to have a full kind of a Black Parenting 101, Native American How to Live in Peace 101, you know, Hispanic or Latino American How Not to be Perceived as, you know, whatever those, the gangs and stuff is, right? I'm just asking you, if you are within my earshot, to hear me and to think about the humanity in each one of us. And so, you know how I process life. I sit down and I write, And so I sit down a few days ago when I listened to this young man explain his brother's life. And listen to how he said his brother and his mother connected, and the deep love that she has for her child. And when I did that, I thought about some of the poetry that I had written, and I have a book that I've, you know, a manuscript we put together that is talking about the sons of God. Excuse me, I got a little emotional. My manuscript is for anyone who wants to read it and be aware. And I open up the door for anyone who wants to talk to me some more on this. Because one more is one too many. And so, you know, I just ask you to think about that.